You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where trainer and trainee discuss fitness, herbalism, and healthy habits for life. We're your hosts. I'm Paula Kirsch, owner of Botanically Curious and artisan herbalist.
And my name is Danielle Kreese, certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. Now, before we get started, if you could do us a brief favor and go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, let's start the show.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode.
Welcome. Paula, how are you?
Good, good, good.
Just finished a workout, mother-daughter workout.
Yeah. Getting excited. We're going to go to the lake this week and do some other fun stuff, and it's finally feeling like summer.
Finally feeling like summer?
Yes.
I thought you thought it would have been feeling like summer for a long time now with this heat.
Yeah, well, definitely.
But summer activities, I guess, right?
Yes.
That's nice. That's nice. Yeah. We're about to get into an exciting topic of like nutrient timing and herbal timing. So kind of when and what is the best way to ingest the things that are going to support your body. And some of these things may actually surprise you because, you know, there's a lot of different research and a lot of different opinions that go around. But we're going to give you one side of it, at least our side of it. But before we get started, Paula, what have you pulled today for our botanical card?
So we have the juniper. And I think we've pulled this maybe in episode 3 or 4 before, but it is associated with the property invigorate. So the juniper berry is mostly used, you know, especially in Native American practices and herbalism and things like that as a diuretic. Also used to induce uterine contractions. So technically can be used as a contraceptive, mostly to induce labor and things like that. It's a good one to have, but it's also one that just kind of, like it says, invigorates, kind of makes you wake up a little bit. And I think that is really where we're at with what we're going to be talking about today. Mm-hmm. It's syncing up with certain things. I'm going to be talking about women's cycle and how really our society has been so counterintuitive to what we really need as women and how that works. And, you know, just being in tune and being able to feel invigorated more often, hopefully with some of the tips and tricks that we'll have today.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really looking forward to your part of the conversation because I feel like, well, one, women's health in general just isn't as widely studied as men's health. And two, I think with that comes a lot of misinformation and a lot of just like not even having an awareness that this information exists. I mean, until you and I started talking about like that this cycle is greater than just the 1 week you're on your period or,
right,
or whatever it is that your actual month is broken down. I was never privy to that information. No health class, no conversations with my gynecologist.
Right.
I mean, that was never part of it. So I'm really looking forward to that. And also I'm kind of looking forward to like this nutrient timing, because a lot of people may get really caught up and stressed with when they're supposed to ingest the food, how much, what they're supposed to ingest. You know, we have diets on the market all over the place that eliminate certain things in
right.
order to like activate other parts of your body. And at least from my perspective, I may change your mind on a couple of things. And maybe you'll feel more invigorated because you won't have that stress because you'll be fueling properly or whatever the case may be. So I'm glad we pulled that card.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. So, you know, Danielle and I are constantly learning, adding new things into what we do as professionals. And, you know, a lot of what we do on this podcast is really just being messengers. We're not scientists. We're not researching and sharing our findings. We're essentially just passing along information that we think would be helpful. And so I'm going to also pass along some books, some apps, some websites that'll be helpful that, you know, you can dive into those resources further from listening to this podcast if you're interested, especially as a female, you know, anybody, especially teenage girls. I mean, like you said, if I would have learned this stuff in health class growing up, you know, I wouldn't have felt so hard. It wouldn't have been so hard on myself on the days where I couldn't get things done or,
right,
you know. But society teaches women that periods are kind of a shameful thing or it's kind of a curse and how
or
do I get rid of
you're
it?
You're just like a bitch. Like, oh, what are you PMSing right now? I mean, like,
exactly.
God, that's such a frustrating thing.
Yeah, all of these ridiculous things. And the horrible thing is that, yeah, you probably could be PMSing and you have horrible symptoms and all these other health issues because you're maybe taking some kind of synthetic, you know, birth control and all this other stuff. So we're going to get into that.
Yeah, just a general pain and discomfort of going through your cycle. I mean, I've seen, I guess this doesn't have to do with your cycle per se, not the cramping that comes with it, but you see those videos of men when they get the feeling of like a contraction.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes if you had to deal every single month, obviously not to the extent of a birth contraction, but like that cramping and that feeling, you may be maybe not your best self either. And I do think that this is important, not just for knowing how the physical body is working, but just like you said, we have a lot of shame around like, oh, I feel so lethargic, or I feel like I didn't get anything done, or my brain feels foggy. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe if we had an understanding that it was kind of beyond just that you were feeling tired, we wouldn't have that then that shame spiral that also comes with that month, because, you know, like we're going to talk about, you kind of have that week of like optimization, but then what else is happening in that rest of that month? I mean, that's still 3 other weeks about.
All of those things that are really important. So to kick it off, I'm just going to say, you know, here are some resources that I think would be really useful. If you are a teenager in particular, you've got a teenager that you know, your daughter, your niece, maybe it's your sister, whatever, and they're looking for ways to just keep track of not only when they might be getting PMS symptoms, you know, their period, all of those things, but really why the shifts in their body are changing. Because when we're talking about nutrition, when we're talking about cycling, timing things in the right way, it's to counteract a lot of the things that we see, like maybe you've got extra greasy hair or skin at one point in time. Maybe you're getting premenstrual symptoms. They have something now that's like an Uber PMS. It's even worse. You get horrible, horrible cravings to the point where you don't even know why you're eating. You're not even hungry, but it's just that insatiable craving. You know, all of these things where 6 months ago, I didn't even know this thing existed, but doing more research. And, you know, so we're sharing this information. There's a great app called Clue. It's Clue Period and Cycle Tracking. So I suggest and recommend if you're wanting to do this, whether you're trying to get pregnant, whether you're just trying to balance out your health, I think this is a really important thing. Download it on the first day of your period and start tracking. So that way, you know, for sure, I'm going to be talking about 4 different cycles that women go through. Cause the misconception here is that we go through a 24-hour cycle. Mm-hmm. We are not men. We don't go through a 24-hour cycle. It's not like we should be able to, as the sun rises and as the sun sets, do the same thing over and over again. We have a completely different 28-day cycle for the most part that we really need to be in tune with. And, you know, because of that, there's certain days that you're going to have amazing energy. There's certain days that you're not going to want to do a lot of things. But this hustle culture that we have that's been built around kind of the male hormone cycle has really been a hard thing for women to get past, especially if you're in the workforce, especially if you're doing other things as an entrepreneur or businesswoman. And like I mentioned, birth control, if there's synthetic hormones in there that suppress, you know, one of the things that I say is suppression leads to depression. And so when you're suppressing your cycle, you're suppressing the natural thing that your body's supposed to do, it's going to lead to a plethora of other health issues, depression, it's going to affect your gut biome, long-term health. And you're like, well, you know, I'm listening to this and my period is a horrible thing and I'm on birth control because it helps my mood and it helps all of these things. Well, if you don't have PCOS, if you don't have leaky gut, if you've never had issues with your gut, if you don't, you know, have issues with infertility, libido, hormones, if none of those things are in the category, then maybe you're okay. But chances are, especially as you get older, especially in your 30s, which I consider extremely young still, you'll start seeing gut issues, you'll start seeing libido issues, hormone imbalances, all kinds of things, because it's all tied within your cycle. So there's some fantastic books that you can kind of dive into further. In the Flow is a fantastic book. In the Flow, and that's FLO, has an amazing resource in there as well about diet and exercise for women and the pros and cons for that based on your hormonal cycles. So like the ketogenic diet, the intermittent fasting, the pros and cons to a lot of those. So for instance, if you're looking at intermittent fasting, one of the disadvantages of that, and this is coming straight from this flow in the flow book, is that it takes a toll on your hormones and your biological systems in a number of ways. And so, you know, looking at these books, plummeting your blood sugar in particular is something that we always talk about, especially with nutrition, mm-hmm. right? So anything in particular that causes blood sugar imbalances, especially with new diet and exercise, is really harmful to your hormonal health. And that's, you know, one of the things we really want to key into with this. And that's why we're talking about timing nutrition and a lot of those other things. So I'm excited to hear what kinds of tips and tricks and other things you have for us in terms of nutrition.
I mean, honestly, I hope that I don't disappoint, because for the most part, the tips and tricks are going to seem way less surprising, I guess, than you would think. But the simplicity of them may be what surprises you, especially because there is so much research going around. I mean, you have things like the keto diet, which is like so heavily based around fat and trying to like tap into like burning fat, I guess, as your energy source versus burning like carbs and glycogen. You have things like that all over the place. But in regards to the greater amount of research, there still needs to be a lot that needs to be done, but there are some key things that we know for sure. So with nutrient timing, you're kind of thinking about when to eat and what to eat, essentially, that's going to optimize your performance. I mean, that's why people do nutrient timing or think about it for the most part. But there are a lot of factors that you should take into consideration. The type of workout you're doing, the amount of work that you're doing, and the duration of time. So the amount being, you know, are you doing a two a day? The duration being, are you working out for longer than 60 minutes? Mm-hmm. The type being like, is it endurance versus a strength workout? So those are things to take into consideration. Because like I said, you're trying to provide adequate fuel to support the energy demands. So on average, the body stores enough glycogen for about 90 to 120 minutes of endurance exercise. So that means if you kind of eat healthy and eat regularly, you should have enough glycogen stores to where you don't hit that wall where you start to feel that like, you know, that like real fatigue. And just to be clear, glycogen is the stored form of glucose, which is derived from carbohydrates mostly, and it's the primary source of energy. So you can derive energy from fat that usually comes with like way longer durations of workout, and a little bit from protein, but honestly, protein is hardly even like thought of for the most part as an energy source. It does so much else for our body. So here, predominantly, when we're talking about the glycogen stores, we're talking about it being pulled from carbohydrates. And like I said, you've heard of hitting that wall. So that happens usually around 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. So obviously people are different. Everyone is different. I mean, you have those ultra marathoners or endurance athletes who have kind of trained their body in different ways. But for the most part, your average person may hit that wall at about 60 minutes. I mean, think about at the very end of your workout session or at the end of, you know, a class that you're taking. You're definitely starting, you know, those last few minutes are kind of the hardest because you feel completely depleted of that energy that you had from the beginning of class. So when you have gone through all of the muscle glycogen in the body, your body is trying to convert other forms of stored energy. So that's going to be that lean tissue and that fat. So unless you are replenishing the body with exogenous or outside carb replenishment, you're probably going to find that that 60 minutes is predominantly your max. And just for the record, guys, if you do hear any weird noises in the back, as I mentioned, we're still, I mean, the puppy is still a puppy. We do this every week. So she's only about maybe like, I don't know, 11 weeks old at this point. So if you hear a little biting here and there, it's just her. Paula's not gnawing at the table because she's really hungry after her workout or anything like that. But just really quickly, kind of before I tap in a little bit more to the differences that in the demands needed on your body between endurance and strength, I just wanted to really quickly go over the energy systems of the body or the metabolic pathways. And I'm not going to go into this on too many details. Honestly, they could be talking about these three pathways could be a session in its own, an episode in its own. So I'm just going to kind of give a brief overview. But you have three systems. So the first one being the ATP PC system. So this system is used up incredibly quickly. It doesn't require any oxygen, and it's actually only going to last about 10 seconds or so. So it's almost that like first onset of power or strength that you have in that first part of your exercise. A lot of people like to think that it could also be kind of like that initial power used in the sprint.
Right.
You then go into that second system, which is the glycolytic system. And this is the breakdown of glucose that's predominantly being derived from those carbs. And it's going to create ATP, ATP being that energy molecule that you need. This lasts a little bit longer, about 60 seconds or so. And then you go into that last system. That last system does require oxygen. It's the oxidative system, and this is when it starts kind of pulling more from the fat in order to create your energy. And this is gonna be more low intensity but long duration movement. So kind of maybe like a marathon where it's kind of steady state the entire time, but it's gonna last for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with those three things, you could kind of see how they work through the body in different exercises. You know, even the second one we talked about, the glycolytic system, which lasts about 60 seconds, that can be replenished. So think about those intervals that you have when you're doing HIIT exercises. You may work for only 45 seconds, so you haven't completely depleted, and then you give yourself a little bit of rest time to try to replenish a bit there. So I just wanted to talk about those. Now, when it comes to endurance exercises, carbs are going to be your main substrate used during moderate to high intensity, and fat, like I just mentioned, are going to be used more in lower, longer intensity exercises. But before I start like spewing off too much, I'm going to pass it back off to Paula so you could ingest what I just said about those three energy systems, and then we're going to break down kind of endurance and strength workouts for you.
Nice. Yeah. Every time I hear some of that with longer, I always think of walking and how people underestimate how if you walk for a really long time, it can be such a beneficial thing and burn fat and all of that. So it's, you know, it's not always just a high intensity workout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, walking can do an incredible deal for people, especially if they're just starting. To go for a 30-minute walk can quite literally be the difference between like you being healthier versus you being more conditioned for like chronic disease.
Right.
I mean, that's why movement can be based on you and your body and where you're at. It doesn't all have to look the same.
So one of the things we're going to be talking about, like I said, is the four cycles. Now we're going to start with menstruation because that's the easiest to identify. And if you start with that, that's really the beginning of your cycle. And that is usually 3 to 7 days, sometimes a little more than seven, when your body is releasing everything that it has built up throughout the 28 days. And then you have the follicular phase. So this is 7 to 10 days usually. This is really your body telling it's preparing to ovulate. Follicular phase is happening the same time the menstrual phase is happening for the first 7 days. And so technically your body is still within that phase, but we think of the follicular phase as more of the preparing to ovulate. So it's ovulation is just usually a 24-hour period, but this is really the main reason why I wanted to talk about this today, because I'm like this. I know a lot of other women that are like this where, you know, maybe I'm feeling a little off. I'm feeling grumpy. I'm feeling maybe brain fog, but there's like 3 to 5 days out of the week or out of the month that I am actually coherent.
Yeah.
I have energy. I feel
like you're
I
just
can,
like, damn, that was a great week. Like
yeah,
I got so
I,
much
I,
done.
Yeah. I feel like I can take on the world, and it's really right around that ovulation stage because biologically, you're trying, you know, you're more confident, maybe you feel a little bit sexier because you're trying to get pregnant. Whether your body realizes that or not, if you are having a period on a regular basis, you might see this kind of ebb and flow happen. So I'm not going to talk too much about ovulation because that's just when the eggs are released, or the egg, one egg is released and it's waiting to be fertilized. But then in that luteal phase, that even though that's the second half, the 14 to 28, that can even be split in half to really say there's a beginning of the luteal phase and then an end of the luteal phase. That beginning of that luteal phase right after and around ovulation is when you still kind of feel a little bit good. And then toward the end is when you start getting those PMS symptoms after, you know, 21 days into your cycle. start getting that PMS, maybe you get a little bit of bloating, maybe some of those other symptoms are coming up because you know your body's getting ready. That's really, you know, you can slice it and think of it as supporting in the beginning, that nesting stage of like getting your uterus ready and making it all comfy, cozy for the egg so that way it can be fertilized. And then halfway through, it's like, damn it, I'm not being fertilized. Throw this shit out. Let's try again next. And then it's like the discharge or the secretion phase. So some of the other books that I recommend and some of the areas where we'll be pulling from for the herbs that I'll be talking about and things, Rosemary Glassdoor, for any of those who are in the herbal industry, started researching it because you wanted to maybe be an herbalist at home or do some of those other things, you'll know Rosemary Glassdoor is a big name within the herbalism community. She has a fantastic book for women called Herbal Healing for Women, and I highly recommend that. It's got a ton of really great recipes and things in there. So we're going to just touch on a few of these herbs today, but there's plenty of things depending on your age, what cycles you're in, what stages in life, all of these things, she's got it covered, which is fantastic. If you're looking to get pregnant, this is a fantastic time to really hone into those different phases. A really good book for that is the Natural Pregnancy book. And that's a really great one. It's got some things on herbs in there, especially if you don't know too much and you're not sure around pregnancy, what herbs are safe. That's a fantastic book. And then the last one is just day-to-day that I think is really helpful is the Women's Herbal Apothecary, and that's got some fantastic stuff as well. So like I said, you know, we only have a short amount of time for our podcast. I'm not going to dive into a bunch of recipes and other things, but these are fantastic resources for you so that way you can kind of take ownership of a lot of that. So we're going to be talking about the herbs for each stage now that you kind of get an idea of the four, some of the nutrition aspects that you might want to look into. And, you know, hopefully this will help with nutrition timing, with timing of your life. If you know that you're going to be at the end of your luteal phase from 21 days to 28 days, probably not the best time to make big life plans, have big, huge meetings for anything, because you are going to be, you know, potentially having PMS symptoms. You're not going to be feeling as great. Your hormones are going to be dumping. And so you're going to be feeling really lethargic. And I think the same can be said for when you eat, what nutrition goes where, especially when you're trying to improve your workouts.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, like I said, you may actually be really surprised as to what you need or how simple it actually is in regards to what you need and when you can do it. So for an endurance athlete, you know, everyone is a little different because there's no one size fits all. And this goes for herbs. This goes for movement. This goes for at least to me, this should go for medicine. Mm-hmm. And everything else, you know, the way that you eat is going to depend on your size, your gender, your training program, what sport you're doing. All of those things play a role. I mean, think about the energy output maybe in a type of yoga class versus, you know, a CrossFit class or something. And don't get me wrong, I know that energy is needed and that strength is like huge in yoga. So I'm not saying anything in that regard, but it just may require a different replenishment than, let's say, a higher intensity workout. So just keep that in mind that everything here is going to be dependent on you. And if you really wanted to tap in and you do have a nutrition coach, these are going to be some things that they do take into consideration. So with endurance athletes, one of the hardest things for them is you could get into trouble meeting the calorie demand that you're putting on your body. And one of the things that I hope to talk about one day, and next week we may talk about like some myths and stuff that go on in nutrition and herbalism and hydration and all that stuff. But it's this word calorie. I want to almost replace calorie with energy, because when you are thinking about eating, yes, it is for pleasure. Yes, it should be something that you enjoy. You shouldn't feel deprived. You should feel satisfied. But I also want you to think of it as literal energy that you are putting into your body so that you could then do all the things that you want to do. And when we're talking about an endurance athlete, we're talking about someone who's going to exercise for longer than 60 minutes. It could also be someone who is going to exercise again within less than 24 hours. So those are all things to take into consideration. So carbs can be pretty critical when you're trying to optimize your performance, because like we said, that's pretty much your main source of glucose, which is your main source of energy. So you kind of want to have a continuous supply. So that could be anywhere between 8 to 12 grams a day per kilogram a day. And if you have greater glycogen stores, this may be able to offset the fatigue that's going to come. So you may, not that it won't come, because if you work out for long enough, you are going to deplete those stores that you have in your body, but you may be able to delay that fatigue at least. Mm-hmm. So if you are exercising greater than 60 minutes, so if you're a marathon runner, if you are just an endurance athlete in general, you should begin carb replenishing shortly after the onset of your workout with gels or with drinks, things are easily accessible. And I actually remember hearing from someone, they suggested when I was trying to summit Shasta, they suggested having all of those gels and stuff because it was such an easy, quick way to add fuel to the body without you having to actually stop your movement. And I remember them telling me about every 45 minutes. And I didn't exactly know why every 45 minutes. I just kind of thought it was just to kind of give you that little pep in your step. But there is a real scientific reason to doing it that way. And it's because of that wall we just talked about that tends to get hit at about 60 minutes. So if you replenish beforehand, you kind of get that jump off. You kind of get ahead of that fatigue and ahead of that depletion that you may feel. But the timing of your post-exercise meal is only really critical if you exercise within less than 24 hours of that time. You know, if you're doing a two a day, if you're doing a late workout and then waking up early the next morning and it's only going to be about 12 hours between your workouts, then it becomes a little bit more critical to time your nutrition. But for the most part, honestly, friends, for the standard individual who's just on a fitness journey, who works out 20, 45, 60 minutes a day, it's really not going to be bad either way. So you may be able to or want to replenish quickly, or you may be able to wait and it's not going to harm you one way or another. Like I said, really the timing only comes down to kind of these specific types of athletes. But if you want to fuel up beforehand, a good rule of thumb is maybe about 2 to 4 hours before things get digested differently. Your macros get digested at different times, and this kind of gives it a little bit of that window so that you could kind of get everything you're trying to get out of that nutrition you're putting into your body. Now, when it comes to resistance exercises, strength training, trying to build up muscle, hypertrophy, you may not think that it depletes glycogen as much as maybe running for an extended period of time because you don't feel that same like cardiovascular fatigue. But there can actually be quite a significant decrease of muscle glycogen with your resistance training as well. And you know, when you are this, your food may come a little bit more into play with resistance training, just because bringing that protein in is also important, because protein does play an important role in, you know, rebuilding the muscle after you've kind of torn it or broken it up a little bit during your workout, and kind of helping to build upon that muscle as well. But resistance training stimulates muscle protein synthesis, but that is further stimulated by protein ingestion. So it always comes back to this idea, at least the way that I interpret all of this, it always comes back to this idea of what you're putting into your body is there to support you. I mean, it's there to just help optimize the things that are already happening in your body. Your body is this incredible thing that is doing 1,000 bajillion things all the time just to keep you moving, to keep you from something as simple as breathing to something as extreme as marathon running or summiting a mountain. So all of these things that you're putting in your body are just for support. And I personally don't think they should add stress. I mean, most of us are not professional athletes, or we're not, you know, ultra marathon runners. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, it's actually a lot more simple than you think. But you do need enough calories. You do need enough energy for your intense training, for competition, for building and repair muscles. But whether you are an endurance athlete or a resistance athlete, the most important thing that I think I could tell you about nutrient timing is not when, but what. You just want to make sure you are taking in high quality foods, high quality carbs, high quality proteins and fats. This should be your focus. Like I said, unless you are doing back-to-back workouts, unless you are working out for 2 hours or multiple hours because you're training for an extensive running competition, then really your focus should be on not skipping meals, not eliminating things from your diet, but just making sure the things that are in your diet are going to be of quality and almost like consistently giving your body that fuel. That's when it comes to, you know, if I talk about nutrient timing for anything, it's that you shouldn't be skipping meals. That should be your nutrient timing focus, is that your meals and your snacks are consistent so that you could have energy throughout the entire day without hitting that wall.
Yeah, absolutely. The more and more we talk about this, focused on the female body in specific, the more I am in awe of every single thing a woman's body does while she's not only working out, but maybe she's pregnant, so she's literally creating life inside of her.
Yeah.
I mean, like, your body is going through so many things and you're just killing it. You know, it's just amazing that we can function the way that we do.
Yeah.
You know, we were just joking right before the podcast started, to be in tune with what moon cycle it is in the sky, what your moon cycle is, or where you are in your phase, what things you have going on, you know.
Your energetics for that day, how you're feeling
right,
when you're waking
up. Your nutrition,
yeah.
All of these things. It's
so
just,
much.
You know, especially if you're not one to, you know, like I can stick with a routine for about a week, but then I'm like, ugh, I hate it. I need to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going back to some of the phases, when you're in the menstruation phase, like we mentioned, you've got a drop in hormones, your energy level's really low. This is a really great time to just relax. Don't worry about, now your body's burning a lot more calories naturally because it's trying to get this process started. It's trying to secrete the uterine lining at this point because you're not going to be pregnant and getting everything out. And so it takes a ton and ton of energy. So biohacking, to a certain extent, if you're looking to keep on track with whatever wellness, weight loss goals you have during the menstrual cycle, it's a great time to do like a paleo, keto, grain-free, keep it light, which is fantastic because it's going to support your hormones. It's going to support, you know, body temperature, all these things that are going to be really important for you to have the energy to do that workout that you're doing. Beets are fantastic. I think I posted something a little while ago on the stories, and it had like beets in it and a bunch of other things. It was a pre-workout because beets in general help oxygenate the blood, but especially when you're going through the menstrual phase and you're trying to just keep going with things, root vegetables are fantastic. Flaxseed is going to help because as things are being secreted, you need to prep your body for rebuilding itself. For herbs, you want things that are going to be gentle cleansers because your body's cleansing itself right now. So you might be experiencing cramps. One herb that is great for that is cramp bark. It's right in the name, but it releases that tension in your muscles that causes, you know, cramping a lot of the time. Turmeric is fantastic because it stays in the gut and it helps with digestive support. Cherries, prunes, anything that's like really rich in vitamins and minerals. Nettle is fantastic because you're losing a lot of blood, which means you're losing a lot of iron, and it helps get those minerals back into your body. Red raspberry leaf helps tone the uterus. So after you go through that shedding phase, you're then going to want to help rebuild red raspberry leaf. And even red clover is great throughout the entire, you know, 28-day cycle, but specifically for this. Now, mushrooms are a big one. It's huge, especially with everything coming full circle with foraging, and people are starting to look more and more into all these different types of mushrooms and all the great things. They have huge benefits for just building endurance, building back that energy and that vitality within the body. So like chaga mushrooms, reishi, all of those are fantastic around this time that you can incorporate. I do like a reishi mushroom tincture and I put it into a coffee or tea. It's a little sweeter. And so just taking that in the morning, which is fantastic, then doing tea in the afternoon, especially if I'm working out, I'll do like an iced tea in particular. So just really important things to keep in mind. Within each cycle, you want to support your body, especially after menstruation, because your body is completely depleted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important, I'm going to emphasize this again, for us to actually have our period. Now, there's, especially if you're on certain synthetic birth control hormone or other things like that. Just because you're bleeding doesn't necessarily mean you're releasing an egg and that you're having a true period. This is something I took a nice workshop with Nicole, which was Dr. Nicole Finkelstein from one of the episodes we had on here. She has the Urban Austin Farm and does some really great workshops and some things virtually. And she talked about this exact same thing and really focused on that, you know, you're not necessarily going through the whole cycle. You're not releasing an egg just because you're bleeding. It's really important to know those things about yourself. So the other 7 to 14 days within your cycle is a follicular phase. This is where you're going to restart its new beginnings. You're starting to prep your body for pregnancy, whether you're actually wanting to get pregnant or not. This is what your body's doing biologically. And so some really important things to realize here. You're going to start getting more extroverted. You're going to start having more of a boost in your mood. This is where you're going to definitely want to start maintaining your blood sugar levels again, incorporating nuts and fiber into your diet. Nettles still, I would recommend drinking some nettle tea, incorporating that maybe into baked goods that you have. Holy basil is great for this. The emotional support aspect, the immune aspect that it gives you. Shishandra berry is fantastic for kidney health. When we're talking about releasing and kind of secreting the body, the big muscles besides obviously the uterus within that are working are your kidneys and your liver. And so you're going to want to support those. And it's going to help with that stress reduction and kind of lift your energy. Goji berries are another one. Like I said, anything that's kind of decadent within this first, you know, 7 to 14 days before you go into your ovulation, you're going to want to rebuild everything. Milk thistle, we've talked about that. That's a fantastic herb to incorporate, whether that's a tea or a supplement. Chicory root. If you go on to Botanically Curious Instagram, you can scroll down a few, and I have something with chicory root, dandelion, and a few others for like a coffee alternative, which is really great. And just remember that your body is already constantly detoxing. We talk a lot in the media about detoxes. Your body, especially for women, constantly detoxes itself, and it knows what it's doing. So it's just your job to support that process. So maca is another great one that you can incorporate into baked goods as a supplement. You can put it into your coffee, whatever it might be. Just remember, within that first 7 to 14 days after your period, you're still wanting to support your body.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. God, so much that I've never heard of about all of this stuff. So thank you for providing so much information. I'm going to kind of end my little segment by almost like debunking at least a little myth. And like I said, everyone is different. Everyone's situation is different. The way everyone moves is different. How long they move is different. So just take it all with a grain of salt. But a lot of people think or have heard about this anabolic window that you have to kind of eat within 30 to 45 minutes or so of your workout in order to maximize the nutrient absorption and get into that muscle repair and replenish those glycogen stores. 1 to 2 hours max for your max protein synthesis would be when you would want to consume that. Now, while this may be a general rule of thumb, and there's nothing to say that there's nothing harmful with eating 30 to 45 minutes after your workout or right after your workout or anything like that. But again, I just can't stress it anymore that for the most part, unless you are that endurance athlete, unless you're doing 2-a-days, unless you're doing it back to back, you really don't need to overthink it. For some people, they fit in their workout when they could fit in their workout. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're able to go have a full meal right after their workout. They may be able to think ahead. They may be able to think smart. And, you know, for example, Paula brought a thing of almonds and berries or dried berries for her to snack on after our workout because she knew she was going to need to use her brain and kind of jump into this space right now with the podcast. But what I want to emphasize to you the absolute most is that recent data shows that the way we eat over the course of the entire day is more important for our body composition and our performance than what we eat right after our exercise. So I think that that could eliminate a lot of stress people may feel and a lot of, you know, it's like Paula said, there's so much to take into consideration. If you're trying to really follow all of these things, you're especially women, your cycle with your body, your hormones, when you should eat this, what part of your cycle you're in, how your body's reacting, you know, like what herbs you should take that day, depending on how your internal body is feeling, that's going to be pretty overwhelming. That's already so much to take into consideration. So unless, and I'm sorry for repeating this again, but unless you're that specific athlete, take a little bit off your plate. Mm-hmm. Focus more on those high quality foods that you're getting in throughout the entire day. Mm-hmm. Having those snacks in between your meals so you never feel completely depleted. Those are the areas and simple and kind of really accessible ways that you can support the body and not feel this abundance of stress. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're trying, you know, kind of taking accountability for yourself is a lot of information and it's a lot of mindfulness and it almost feels like a full-time job. So when and where you could kind of ease up on yourself and just simplify it a little bit, I don't see why you shouldn't personally. So be conscious of what you are eating over the course of the entire day. Mm-hmm. That should be your focus, not just what am I going to eat right after this workout.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more and more you think about it, like I mentioned, we've got the four phases. You've got menstruation, follicular, ovulatory, and then luteal. And you look at what your body's doing within that phase. You know, when you're in the ovulation stage and you're feeling amazing, you're light, your body's built up all this energy, your hormones are probably at their peak, you're feeling awesome. Your body is pretty supported at that point, especially if you've been doing a lot of this nutrition in a whole health way, that maybe it's a good time to do more of a raw, vegan, light, you know, salads, all of those other kind of things where you're getting healthy foods, but it's lighter foods. And with that, I'm going to talk about the last phase, which is the luteal phase. And I mentioned earlier that it's kind of, even though it's the second half, you're 14 to 28 days toward the end of your cycle. And I mean cycle as in the four different cycles. That's even split up into two, where you've got the supporting from day 14 to day 21, and then from day 21 to 28, it's kind of the secretion discarding phase. So that day 14 to day 21 is when you're still feeling good. Your body isn't sure whether or not it's going to break down that egg, if it's going to be fertilized. And so some of the things you can do to support your body from an herb standpoint is chasteberry. So this is a great one. Actually, what it does is it lengthens your luteal phase. And this is really important because if you have a short luteal phase, it can actually lead to conception issues. So if you're trying to conceive at some point, this is something that you really want to incorporate and something to focus on. It also helps boost your progesterone, which is kind of a feel-good hormone when it's in balance in the correct ways. This is also a good time to incorporate things like ginger, which is a little more warming. It's a carminative, so it's going to help kind of push some of those things, especially when you're starting to get into day 21 and you might feel a little bit of that bloating or some of those other things. It's going to start to support that detox in your body. And then burdock root is fantastic because as you start building up into your cycles, you've gone through kind of ovulation, and you're waiting to see whether or not that egg's going to be fertilized, not you, obviously, but your body, you're going to then need to remove a lot of those hormones or the things that are excess and really flush out the body. And so burdock root is a fantastic one for that. It also helps to cleanse the liver. Now, like I mentioned, holy basil is great for emotional support. If you are wanting to pick and choose how to cycle your herbs, this is why I'm mentioning them in the different cycles. But it's great throughout the whole month. If you'd like holy basil tea, I put it in pretty much everything for myself. Ashwagandha is a great one for stress because your hormones are starting to dip. Maybe it's going to be a little bit harder to take on the day or take on some of the tasks you have. You might feel a little more stressed than usual. So incorporating some of those adaptogens are really important. And then passion flower is really good because your body's starting to realize like, hey, I don't need to be confident and I don't need to have all this energy and I don't need to be sexy anymore because I've already dropped my egg and it's probably not going to be fertilized. Even though you'd love to feel confident and sexy all 28 days or 30 days of the month. So a great herb to incorporate with that is passion flower. It's fantastic for stress, for sleep, for your libido. It helps the female orgasm, especially if that's something with your libido and just having a crazy stressful time, mentally being able to get into that mood and make that happen. I just want to remind you that suppressing these natural functions that a woman's body goes through really leads to side effects like depression, leaky gut, infertility, hormone imbalances, libido problems, all of these things. So don't be shamed into, you know, oh, it's that time of the month. embrace it, learn how to hack your body, learn what things your body needs, what herbs you can incorporate, and be the best that you can be for the whole 28 days.
I'm straight. Have a great day. Peace and love.
Ideas or topics discussed during this podcast should not be a replacement for any type of medical advice. Although Danielle is a certified trainer and I have a knowledge of herbal medicine, any decision to incorporate an exercise or herbal remedy is always your own.